Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
All right, so Matt, what is a four-letter word with a small laugh in the middle?
I don't know.
No, it really is. What is a four-letter word with a small laugh in the middle?
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
Right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Not bad, man. Not bad.
Good. Good. So before we get into it, we will say go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. We've got 3 different levels, and you can get a buttload of back episodes and stuff if, you know, you've run out of main episodes and you're waiting week to week for a new episode and you're not a patron. Well, go sign up, become a patron, and ask in the graveyard, our Facebook group. Ask people if they're patrons and see if they enjoy it, because yeah, we've gotten some good comments about our side quest episodes that's for $10 members. Plus, if you're 5 or 10, you get ad-free audio and video versions of the main episodes when we have ads. And if not, you just want to be a $1 member, you get a bonus audio episode that can go straight to your podcatcher, and you can listen to our bonus episodes in the podcatcher.
Yeah.
So patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up to become a patron. I promise you're going to enjoy something on there.
Yeah. And either way, whatever you do, you're helping the show.
Absolutely.
And that's, we couldn't do it without your help.
Absolutely. And speaking of helping the show, check out our sponsors. We've got links in the show notes with our codes, if we have one, to get you a discount or a free something from them if you order it. That helps us out tremendously too, because that tells the sponsors that they can come back to the show and that we're having an impact. So go check them out. That would be great. Also, share the show. If you have not, please share it with a friend. Tell them about the graveyard. Get them in one of our social media platforms, something like that, or just get them listening. Yeah. You know, they're going to like something. And Matt, on that note, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right. So tonight, it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight's Graveyard Tales is all me.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I did all the research.
I thought you were going to say all male nudes.
It's, and I'm all like, no. Only from the waist down.
Right. So,
that's right. You know, it's got to be tasteful.
Patreon.com/graveyardtales to get the unedited video.
It's just the camera that's on the floor. That's
right,
all it is.
Right.
You hear everything, and it's just a camera under the desk.
You get
the
lower angle. It's disgusting, but some people like it. I don't know.
Like, why is Matt's nose so long?
Yeah, right? I knew
I
he was bald.
I remember him having that much hair. Okay. No, so tonight, we're going to do, we talked about this. we kind of were going back and forth about this topic for a couple weeks, and I finally said, okay, we can't figure out how to divide it. Let me do it. So I did the research on this. So where I'm essentially teaching Adam about it as well as the rest of you guys. So Adam is going to provide the color commentary, but this is a very interesting topic. And it, I don't know, it struck a chord with me the first time I ever heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is insanely cool. And it is simulation theory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if you're going, what the heck is he talking about? If you don't know what simulation theory is, or if you've not heard it in those terms, all it is the idea or the hypothesis that our reality is really like a big computer simulation,
mm-hmm.
like the Matrix. Like everything we know, everything we see is just, it's simulated for our benefit as humans.
Right.
And nothing is actually real. It's real to us, but it's because we all live in this simulation.
Yep. And it is like you said, a lot like the Matrix, because that's, you know, if you've seen the Matrix, then you have a general idea of what it could be, what the simulation theory could be.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much more to it, because I think on the front end, if you pitch this idea to somebody, they're like, man, there's no way, you're nuts, that's crazy. But if you stop and think about it and investigate it and look at what evidence there might be, it becomes pretty compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to discuss some things. We're going to give some examples. We're going to talk about how this all came about. And really dig into it. So by the time we're done tonight, you may have a different opinion about whether or not we live in a simulation. Okay.
All right. Change my mind.
So the idea of simulation theory is much, much older than we think. I mean, most people have the idea, they never thought about it until they saw the movie The Matrix.
Right. Yeah.
Then they started going, what if it's really like that? You know, what if machines run the world and we're just energy cells for them? But that the idea of the world being a simulation actually goes back thousands of years. And in Plato's Allegory of the Cave, Plato. Okay. His idea was that humans may only perceive shadows of true reality. And it's a metaphor that really, it lends itself to modern simulation theory. The idea is that I see an apple, but I don't really know what an apple is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this red, shiny, round object with a stem growing on a tree, and I have assigned the value of apple to it. I know things about it. I know how it tastes, how it smells, how it feels. But it's only an apple because I perceive it to be an apple.
Right.
Okay?
Is it, and I don't mean to jump ahead of you if you have this analogy, but speaking of older philosophers, it's the campfire analogy, where the campfire in the cave, because the allegory goes that there's two men chained in a cave and they're facing the back wall.
Uh-huh.
So their reality is the shadows of the people walking outside the cave. They see shadows of humans. Mm-hmm. They see shadows of birds and dogs and stuff on the back wall, right?
Right.
Well, they finally get free and they go out into the real world and then everything's 3D.
Yeah.
Then they see humans for what they are in full color and dogs. And then they freak out because they can't handle it and they go back into the cave to live that life.
Exactly.
And that's what you talking about, you know, a shadow of what things might actually fully be reminded me of.
Well, is that, that's exactly it. That's the allegory of the cave.
Yeah.
And you explained it better than I was going to. but that's exactly it. It's, you know, there's another one that I remember hearing as a child, where they're asking these three blind men to describe an elephant, to touch an elephant. And they were like, oh, this elephant, it's big, it's thick, like a tree trunk, you know? And then, no, it's thin and wiry like a snake. Mm. No, it's heavy and it's, you know, and they were all at different parts of the elephant.
Right.
Because they didn't see the whole picture. And that's kind of the basis of this, is what, do we really see the whole picture, or do we see, honestly, I can tell Adam, you know, what something looks like, but in his mind, it's not going to look exactly like I'm describing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times have you done that, where you're trying to tell somebody what something looks like, and they were like, well, that's not what I was picturing in my head.
Yeah. Well, and Ashley and I have talked about this in another sense. We have all agreed that a specific color is green.
Exactly.
But do you see green the same way I see green? You know, is this color green look mm-hmm. the same way to you as it does to me? Almost assuredly, it doesn't.
Right.
But we have both agreed, all of us have agreed, well, that is green. But to me, it might look like somebody else's blue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so it's our perception that we have then pushed into a box
yeah.
to say, this is what this is. And I know for me, I don't see nearly as many colors as Ashley does. Now, that's been scientifically proven that women can see thousands more shades than men.
Right.
And that's why at the paint store, we'll go, do you like this color or this color? And I'm like, well, they're both gray. Mm. And she's like, no, this one has blues in it. Mm-hmm. And this one has creams. I'm like, well, I see both gray, mm-hmm. you know? So I know people see different things, but we've agreed that mm-hmm. this is green. Mm-hmm. And so we all say this is green. No matter what we see, mm-hmm. we say that's green.
Exactly. And, you know, that goes on a whole other tangent, but it fits with this, because you're right. We've all agreed. This is green. This is an apple. This is whatever we call it, that we've all agreed. This is what this is. But that may not be exactly what it is. It's just what we've agreed to as humans. Mm-hmm. Or it's what the simulation has told us that it is.
That too, yeah.
Now, science fiction, of course, has influenced modern simulation theory. We've discussed the Matrix, the whole movie, the entire Matrix universe. But there was also Daniel. I'm gonna mispronounce his name, but it's I think it's Guyou. His novel Simulacron 3, which came out in 1964, very similar in that what we're experiencing is it's individualized. It's my simulation is different than yours. You know, right. What I feel, what I see, what I touch and hear and taste, it's going to be different from every other individual. Okay. Philip K. Dick, the science fiction writer. He was another one that, you know, he wrote a lot of books about perceived reality and time travel. If you ever read the book, The Man in the High Castle, which I think they made a show about that a few years ago.
It sounds familiar.
It's about a separate timeline where the Nazis won mm-hmm. World War II. And what the world is like in that timeline, you know, that the idea that when you have two choices in a timeline, both choices are made.
Yeah.
And there's a timeline where one choice goes, and there's a timeline where in that mindset, there is another timeline where Germany won, or the Axis powers won World War II.
Yeah. You and I have talked about that several times with timelines splitting.
Yeah. But in that thing, the simple thing of, do I want vanilla or chocolate?
Mm-hmm.
There are two timelines, one where you had vanilla and one where you had chocolate.
Right.
They may be virtually identical because it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yep. Inconsequential.
But what if you said, do I go to Harvard or do I go to Podunk University?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a timeline where you went to each place and how your life played out. So in that train of thought, everything would be a simulation. You know, why would we have all these different timelines if one of them is the real one? How would you ever be able to go back in time and figure out what was the one that started? You know, you have your own timeline and then you split off. You don't even realize it. And we've heard a lot of people talk about, we're in a timeline shift right now. You know, mm-hmm. Can you feel it? Are you feeling a little weird? You know, you might be, because we're in this big shift. Now, the modern contemporary idea of simulation theory, it uses academia to describe and define what the simulation could be and how it was developed and how we live within it. And that idea was created by philosopher Nick Bostrom. And in 2003, he released a paper called "Are You Living in a Computer Simulation?" And now, Nick Bostrom, he was an interesting character, but he is credited with formulating the modern simulation theory. And in his 2003 paper, he posts the simulation trilemma. Okay. And what Bostrom says is at least one of these three things have to be true. Number one, that human civilizations never reach a post-human stage, technologically advanced. Essentially, we all die out or we kill each other before we can create a new simulation. Number two is post-human civilizations just aren't interested in running ancestor simulations. So as what that's saying is we have created an ancestor simulation. We have history. We have the discovery of the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
We have the development of Western civilization. We have the creation myths. We have the rise of the Roman Empire. All of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ancestral simulation that was created by the more modern individuals in the simulation.
Yeah.
What he's saying in this one is that after humans, whatever exists beyond humans, you know, creative consciousness or whatever, they don't really care about making any new simulations. We could mm-hmm. do it. We just don't want to. Or we are certainly living in a computer simulation. So one of those things, according to Bostrom, is true. Okay. And it sounds crazy, but it kind of makes sense. You know, the whole idea of, we would create our own simulation for the next humans,
right,
or the next
right.
beings, whatever. Somebody before us created this simulation. And if you've ever looked into the Anunnaki and the idea mm-hmm. that the Earth was just here and the Anunnaki came from another planet and created humans here to mine gold. This is the simulation they created for us. And that we would eventually create a simulation for whoever or whatever comes next after us.
Right.
But then the idea of we are so advanced, we don't really care about creating a simulation for what comes next. Or we're in a simulation now. This mm-hmm. is what we experience is completely simulated. It's not real. You know, Adam, spending time researching topics and sometimes being up late, I know you spend hours sitting at the computer doing editing and so forth. There is one particular bad habit that I will always go to mm-hmm. when I'm sitting at the computer.
Oh, yeah.
And that is where Fume has made it so much easier to quit that bad habit.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that don't know, Fume is a flavored air device with some amazing flavors. It's no nicotine. It's no harmful chemicals. It's just flavored air. And I love the fact that I have something here that I can pick up. You know, I can fiddle with it. I can put it in my mouth. I can breathe through it. And it helps me to not go to that bad habit every time.
Yeah, it really does satiate that that need for me for putting something to your lips and having something in your hand. And like Matt said, it's a flavored air device. It's not a vape, it's not a pipe, and it gives you a fresh way to take control of your habits. They've got flavors like crisp mint, black licorice, peach blush, my favorite, the maple pepper. And I know my mother-in-law, her mint is the favorite, and it's really helped her with her bad habit that she's had for decades. So it's amazing. It's tactile. It's clicky. You can use it as a fidget toy thing if you're just sitting there in your hand or in traffic or in front of a computer editing for hours. And breathing through it, you can do it anywhere because nothing comes out of it. Nothing goes into you except for flavored air. So Fume has already helped over 400,000 people take steps toward better habits. So now it's your turn. All you got to do is head to tryfume.com/tales. That's tryfume.com/tales and use our promo code TALES to kick your bad habit today.
Yeah, just go to tryfume.com/tales. Enter our promo code TALES to get a free gift with your journey pack. So Bostrom reasoned that a technologically mature civilization would have enormous computing power. Even if a very small portion of this simulation, of this civilization, chose to run ancestor simulations, the number of simulated conscious beings would vastly outnumber those in base reality. Does that make sense? So you have a little group of people, and we say we're going to make a simulation, an ancestor simulation, so that we all understand where we came from. Okay?
Right.
The number of people in that simulation would be way more. And that makes sense. Historically, if there's 8 billion people on this planet, there's been way more than 8 billion who have existed before us.
Yeah.
Okay? If you look at the entire amount of time that's passed, there's way more people in that ancestral simulation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a second to kind of get your head around it,
right,
but yeah, that
right.
makes sense.
Now, if you use anthropic reasoning, that's the idea that we should exist as if we are a random observer among all the conscious beings. Like, I am an individual. I am separate from every other thing that I see. And I can observe everything that happens, you know, without objectively. Mm-hmm. You know, I can see this. I can see that. I can see events play out. And I can make inferences about them. So he argued that if these simulations are possible, okay, it becomes more and more statistically likely that you and I, you know, everybody listening tonight, we're all simulated. The idea that we would be the original is, the odds are astronomical.
Right, right.
So we would be the simulation creating a new simulation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, making one for our...
It's getting kind of... Don't worry, we're going to even it out here. So they asked Elon Musk this. They were like, hey, what are the odds that we are in base reality? If this is a simulation, what are the odds that we are the creators of this simulation?
Mm-hmm.
He said, 1 in billions.
Yeah.
Basically, there is no chance that we are in base reality right now. That we are in one of thousands upon thousands of simulations. That we are just in another one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when Neil deGrasse
Tyson... Which could be the multiverse theory.
Exactly.
Instead of multiverses, it's multi-simulation theory.
Exactly. You got it. And we'll get into this, but that... Some people use that to explain the... ghosts and cryptids and all this stuff, that there's bleed over from the simulations.
I wonder that about 50% of the time.
Yeah.
I'm wondering that.
Yeah. I mean, and in a lot of ways, and we're going to hammer this point home at the end, but in a lot of ways, you think about it, is it a timeline? Is it a multiverse? Is it another simulation? It's all basically the same thing. It's just a matter of what you call it.
Right. And one thing I think is maybe it's not bleed over from a simulation or bleed over from, you know, a universe next to ours. What if, okay, you write a program on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you delete that.
Yep.
Well, guess what? There's artifacts left on your computer that a forensic tech can go in and find.
Yeah.
Nothing is ever permanently deleted until you destroy the hard drive.
Right.
So, ghost might be from a previous simulation run on this hard drive. And we're at the same point in that run, they were doing this, and we're getting little artifacts of the simulation that was run before ours. That's why they all look old.
I like it.
You know,
I like that theory. I've not thought of that, but that I like it. But this whole idea of, are we in base reality? They asked Neil deGrasse Tyson the same thing. And he gives us a little bit better odds. He says that we've got a 50-50 chance of being the original base reality.
He's a little more optimistic than...
Yeah.
Some maybe.
But still, there's a 50-50 chance that what we're experiencing is actually real.
Yeah.
Okay. Man, that seems insane. But that's exactly what you would hear from somebody that's living in the simulation.
Right.
You know.
Or somebody as smart as he is, he might be programming it and he doesn't want to give it away.
Yeah. Now, there is an assumption that in Bostrom's argument in simulation theory, and that's the notion that consciousness can arise from any system that implements the right computational processes, not just a biological brain. So he's saying a simulated mind could be as conscious as a biological one, which would make the simulation indistinguishable from reality to the people inside it. So this is the argument against AI.
Uh-huh.
So we see evidence of what AI can do now. Think about what AI would be able to do in a year or 10 years.
100 years.
Yeah. Could it become so advanced that it has a consciousness all of its own?
I think so.
And it's a consciousness that we created. A simulation, essentially.
Yeah. Think of it like this. You play video games a lot, right?
Yeah.
So the NPCs, the non-player characters in there, like you're playing Sims. Remember Sims?
Mm-hmm.
How crappy all that was? And it was fun, but, I mean, they acted weird and all that stuff. I could be a biological brain, and you could be an NPC in this simulation if we're far enough advanced, and I wouldn't know it.
Exactly.
Because you're just as advanced as I am. You have the same thoughts. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why we get along so well, as you were programmed to be my NPC.
Yeah.
You know, and we all have, maybe your wife was created to be your NPC wife. And, you know, that freaks me out.
Yeah.
That I don't like. I need to get off this, because that's freaking myself out, because I'm sitting here thinking, I love my life and I have it good. Yeah. I love my wife. I love my son. I don't want them to have been created to make me happy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And that kind of leads into other, it's the same idea with a different name, like fate, predestination, mm-hmm. all of those things. And Bostrom, to his credit, doesn't necessarily say that there's no free choice. You just don't realize the choice has already been made for you. You think you're making it. He doesn't say that at all. He says, we have choice in the simulation. You know, you choose what you want to do, where you want to go, what you want to be, how you dress, how you look, all that stuff. You make all of those choices. The simulation just adjusts to it so that you get a response. If I decide to come on this show and I'm wearing, you know, a ridiculous Hawaiian shirt, you know, the simulation of Adam is going to tell me, are you really going to wear that shirt tonight on the show?
Yep.
But actually, the simulation of Amanda is going to go, that shirt is hilarious. You cannot wear it to a funeral.
Brings the color in your eyes out, but can't wear it here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I could choose to do it, but the simulation is going to adjust to give me feedback, you know?
Yeah. What is that movie with Jim Carrey? Truman Show. So kind of they react to the things he makes to keep him within that simulation.
Yes. Bingo. So that is exactly, you know, what we're talking about. It's the simulation reacts to your choices and what you do, where you go. Now, understand that Bostrom is not, it's not a direct claim that we indeed live in a simulation. He is saying that if we take these certain assumptions about the technological process, that it becomes statistically probable. You know, so he's not saying this is the way things are. He's just saying that there is a chance, a really good chance, that this is how it is.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not coming out and saying fully, this is exactly what it is. That makes sense?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
He's just saying that mathematically, if we look at technology today, there's a really good chance that that's exactly what we're experiencing.
Yeah, because nobody can prove it currently.
Yeah.
We might be able to at some point, but currently nobody can prove or disprove it.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can't disprove it is the problem.
Right. So in the last, 23 years since, Bostrom officially wrote about this simulation theory, the theory has advanced and people have added to it. And of course, if you look at the technological advances since 2003, if I thought about this that hard in 2003, I'd be like, there is no way. Mm-hmm. But looking at the way things are now because of the technological advances, I sit there and I go, okay, I can see it.
Yeah, it might be possible.
So think about this. Brooks has an Oculus. Okay.
Oh yeah.
And the Oculus Quest 2, the newest one, or one of the newer ones. It may not be the newest one, but anyway, if you've ever put one of those on and played any kind of game or been inside that simulation,
mm-hmm.
you could see how this could be what is our reality, because you go for a walk, around, you see things move around you, walk up to an edge of a cliff. You know full well that you are wearing a headset, mm-hmm. but your brain does not want you to step off that cliff.
Your brain goes back up.
Especially if in the simulation you fall.
Right.
I remember putting on the headset and there was a dragon flight simulation where you're riding on the back of a dragon. And I mean, I could feel my stomach drop as this thing flies and you go up over treetops and you dive down. You can feel those movements, even though I'm standing in the living room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did a roller coaster one,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same way.
So if I go on a roller coaster and I have those sensations when I hit the big drops or go through the loop to loop, and I sit on my couch and I put this on and I get the same reactions from my body, the same sensations.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
Right.
What's the difference? My brain is causing me to react based on the feedback it's getting because this seems like reality to it.
Yeah. And I heard Zuckerberg talk about the Meta thing,
uh-huh.
where he was, I think he's worked on it and they've got it, but he was wanting to fully develop this thing where you could put on the Meta headset. And you could go hang out at a Meta coffee shop.
Yeah.
And meet people and talk to people and do all that. So you're doing what you would do in real life,
mm-hmm.
but you're doing it in a headset mm-hmm. for some reason sitting in your house.
Yeah.
And I don't like that because I like getting out and doing stuff.
Sure.
But there's people that don't. There are people with agoraphobia. There are people with other things that would like to go talk to people and meet people, but they can't leave their house, so they can do that. Or you're just lazy and you don't want to get up and move around. But if that's a possibility,
yeah.
and he's talking about that, is that what you're talking about where our simulation is creating another simulation for the next simulation?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You look at what virtual reality is like now and you think, this is where we're headed. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is exactly where we're headed. Look at video games. I mean, look at the way video games run. I mean, I've played, I don't know, a dozen different games that have this open world where you mm-hmm. can go and explore and you can go do all these things. And you literally can completely engross yourself in this world. You know where right. things are. You know how to get there. There are places that you can't get to. There are places that I have to do something different if I'm going to get to the other side of this mountain. Or I want to go on that side of this wall, but I don't have a key for the door. You know, all of this stuff, you're like, this is inside this simulation. It's reality for this character.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the better these game engines get, the more real they seem. And especially if you play one of these online multiplayer games, kind of like what you're talking about with the online coffee shop, you know,
yeah.
it's essentially a chat room that now you can actually see an avatar of another person, but mm-hmm. they can make that person look exactly like them or look like however they want to look.
Right.
You know,
right. They can be me. And then now I'm some jack dude with muscles walking around and, you know, I don't have gray hairs and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah. So scientists have tried to dig into this simulation theory to see if there is any way to scientifically prove or disprove if we are truly in a simulation. And former NASA physicist Thomas Campbell, he came up with some experiments to try to see maybe we could figure this out. Maybe we could find some hard evidence that would show us. And so he came up with these experiments and he wrote them out in a paper that was published in the International Journal of Quantum Foundations in 2017. I could barely even read the title of the journal. I guarantee you there yeah. is no way I could thumb through this. I'd be like, oh my God, my brain is leaking out my nose while
yeah,
I'm looking at this.
Asleep.
I'm nowhere near intelligent enough to
right.
even hold this journal.
yeah. Yeah.
But the idea was to detect if something is rendering the world around us like a video game. So the example is, okay, let's take one that probably most everybody knows, Grand Theft Auto. So Grand Theft Auto has a huge open world to explore. Your character is only in a certain part of that world at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
So you may can look way far in the distance. And you go, look, I can see the Golden Gate Bridge way over there. I'm going to go to the Golden Gate Bridge. So you steal a car, jump in a helicopter, whatever, and you go there. For the simulation to show you the Golden Gate Bridge, it doesn't require a lot of computing power. It's not very mm-hmm. detailed because it's way off in the distance. As your character gets closer, the game renders more detail into where you're going.
Right. Right.
But it also is making what's behind you much less detailed, if there at all, because mm-hmm. you're not looking at it. You're not going that way. So we can save computer power by not keeping this part of the city. You know, we're only going to render the part of the city that you're in, that you're going to.
Yeah. Right.
And change it as you get there.
It only exists because you're looking at it.
Exactly. Exactly. So Paris, France, and this idea, you know, for me,
doesn't exist
nope. until I go there and then it's mm-hmm. there and I go, hey, look at yep. here. But.
All right, y'all. Now I know that y'all love ghosts and haunted places and stories that send shivers down your spine. And I know that because you're listening to us and you're listening to an episode about simulation theory, which scares the crap out of me when I think about it. So since you like all that, you need to check out the Ghost Bunny podcast. It's hosted by Bridget Marcour, who's a TV personality, a paranormal investigator, and a longtime fan of all things spooky. Now, Bridget isn't just curious, she is committed. With a lifelong passion for the paranormal and an education in parapsychology, she brings real knowledge and deep curiosity to every episode.
And each week, Bridget explores haunted locations, mysterious encounters, and spine-tingling stories from celebrities, experts, and everyday people who've had brushes with the unknown. Now, Bridget brings curiosity, charm, and a little sparkle to every spine-tingling episode, so if you're ready to explore the other side with someone who not only gets it, but has experienced it, subscribe to the Ghost Bunny Podcast, streaming now on all major platforms. Let Bridget guide you to the other side. You know,
I don't think Vermont actually exists.
No, never seen it.
Never been there. I've never met anybody from Vermont. I think Vermont is fictitious. I really do.
It doesn't exist. It's not real. Yeah, there's no way. There's no way it's there. I do know people from Vermont, so I know that, but they're from Vermont. They're not there now.
Right. They just say that because why would a place with that funny a name actually exist? Vermont?
Their simulation really? Tells them that that's where they are from. It's like the Coneheads. You know, we come from France. You know,
and they can't remember what Vermont is like because they've never actually been there. They just know, I'm from Vermont.
That's right. I have a patient that is from Vermont, but has family here. I've seen this woman twice because she's gotten sick and been down here, you know, when she got sick. But she got sick and she needed the services of a physical therapist. So she existed in my simulation for the couple of weeks that I saw her. And then she vanished because she was going back to the non-existent Vermont.
Exactly. See?
So I think, is an NPC in my video game.
Yep, 100%. I think we have just, in this simulation theory, solved one of life's greatest conundrums, and that's Vermont doesn't exist. Yeah.
But taking this idea, and I thought about it. I can't explain it well enough. But have you ever heard of the double slit experiment where they were testing on whether light behaves like a wave or a photon or whatever, particles or waves.
Yeah, whether you could shoot it through one slit or the other.
So if it acts like a wave, if you had ocean waves going through the double slits, then they would do something specific, okay? If it was particles going through, they would do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that when they observe, it can do either or.
Mm-hmm.
So the light passes through and it does things that make you think it's a particle, but then it does things that make you think it's a wave. And so they're like, well, it must be a little of both.
Maybe it's a wave filled with particles. But
what's so interesting about the advanced part of this is that when they look at it, it acts like particles.
Yep.
If they don't look at it, it acts like waves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I heard one of these physicists, you know, in a class saying, so there's a very scientific way to test this is you set it up and then you very quietly unplug the camera. And you don't let the particles see that you unplug the camera so they don't think we're watching.
Right.
And they've done it. But when the observer actually physically looked again, it does the same thing. It reverts back to particles. So it makes you think.
Crazy.
There's got to be an intelligence behind this.
Yep.
Why would what we think is innate properties of light, why would it alter based on what we do? Just by looking at it, it doesn't make sense unless you have the idea of somebody designed it that way.
Yep.
Yeah.
It needs to react like a wave under most circumstances, because that's how it functions best. But they want you to think that light is a particle, so it has to change when you look at it so that your perception of it is that light is particles.
Right.
So, and that also could then lend to panpsychism,
yep,
which everything has a consciousness, and even the light particles have a consciousness, and they're just screwing with
us. That's exactly it. Yeah.
They're like, you know, it's that movie, and I'm blanking on all the things tonight. The movie where the mice are actually in charge of the universe and they blow up Earth.
Oh, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hitchhiker's Guide, yeah. So we think that we're running experiments on the light, yeah, but the light is actually running an experiment on us.
Right, right. And that
maybe the light is smarter than us.
The Earth is just the giant computer program that's, mm-hmm, that's running. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Same kind of idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Douglas Adams, he was ahead of his time. He knew it.
It was
funny and ridiculous, but dang, it could be true. But Campbell believed that, okay, if we can remove the observer from these experiments, the actual recorded information never existed at all.
Mm-hmm.
It only exists because we record it. We observe it. So that's instead of current quantum physics suggesting that the existence of entanglement that links particles across the distance. It, you know, quantum physics says this doesn't, the observation doesn't matter, but we have evidence that it does. So in even simpler terms, using our video game analogy, without the player, the universe around them doesn't exist. So in Campbell's thinking, the universe is exclusively participatory.
Mm-hmm.
It only exists when we need it to exist. You know, if there was no one in Antarctica, if there were no humans there observing anything, would Antarctica even exist?
Probably not.
Until we went there, until, yep, somebody went and saw it. We're like, yeah, it's here. It's right here. I'm looking at it. To, mm-hmm, you. You know, I've never been there. You know, I don't know that it exists. It's much like Vermont. You know?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have people tweet at us and try to prove to us that Vermont exists.
I know.
And I'm not going to believe it.
I'm in Vermont right now.
Yeah. Look, here's a picture. Don't believe it. You could be anywhere.
Look, you could put a sign that says Vermont anywhere. I mean,
you could be in Massachusetts. Down the
street. Yeah.
Which is almost as fictitious, but.
So now we've talked about that. Okay. It looks like with the way these waves or particles or both react in this double slit experiment, that there must be an intelligent design behind it. The question is, if we're in a simulation, who created it? Who,
right,
did this? Now, David Chalmers is a philosopher who, he says the higher being responsible for this hyper-realistic simulation, or a programmer, is in the next universe up.
Mm.
So it's not so much of we're creating the simulation for what comes next. What comes next is creating the simulation for us.
Mm.
And we're the ancestral simulation for that one. So the programmer, so to speak, is in the next one. In his theory, it could be a teenager, you know?
Yeah.
Could be hacking on a computer and running five universes in the background.
That would explain a lot.
It could be someone who is omniscient, all-knowing, all-powerful. But if I create a simulation on my computer, am I not omniscient? I know
for
everything
that world,
about,
yeah,
it, about, yep, that world, that simulation. I become omniscient. So
I'll tell you how you know that I didn't do it is because if it was my simulation, everybody would be naked all the time.
And there would be no doo-doo.
Yeah, 100%. Doo-doo would not exist.
That's a kickback to a conversation we were having before we came on tonight. Yeah.
Pre-mics being heated up.
But if you talk to a Christian, that's God.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk to, you know, an atheist, it's maybe some higher power or nothing. It just happened on its own.
Yeah.
But when we stop and look at these things, you're like, it's all the same thing. It's just a matter of what you call it.
Right. How do you identify?
Yeah. Is it a programmer? Is there somebody running the simulation? Is it God who's running the simulation? If God created the earth and, you know, created man and animals and day and night and everything, is that not technically the definition of a simulation?
Yeah.
I mean, he created it for us, gave us free will inside it. A computer programmer in another simulation creates a world and everybody is like, and he says, you're going to worship me. You know, I mm-hmm. created this. It's essentially the same idea at its core. But you know, I mean, you understand what I'm saying. I'm not trying to make this a religious argument, but I'm just saying it's really all in how you look at it.
Right.
Yeah. We're kind of in a simulation, you know, it's a world designed for humans.
Mm-hmm.
So for this to really operate and for it to actually be carried out, there's two different scenarios. One is everything we know is simulated. Everything that exists, including every person, environment, object, every event, every sensation is coded. It's a byproduct of computer code. This scenario would require hardware powerful enough to simulate all of these components, all of known physics, in a highly detailed intergalactic scale. In reality, in this sense, it may be thought of as an elaborate open world program that's running on a supercomputer or a quantum computer that's way beyond our capability of understanding. Okay. Nothing is real. Everything is a simulation. It's real to us because we are also simulated.
Right.
The other idea is that the world is simulated and we are not. That this assumes that humans themselves are real and organic, but that the world and a number of people that surround us are simulated NPCs. Okay. Uh-huh. Now, to carry this out, we would have to trick our consciousness into thinking that we are in true reality, in which all sensations feel lifelike and simulated characters mimicking humans are able to pass the Turing test. Along with powerful computing hardware, the scenario would also require artificial intelligence complex enough to be perceived as real by the human mind. This is the Matrix idea.
Right.
You know, that yes, humans exist, but the world in which we live, the experiences we have, the people we interact with are not, or at least not all of them. So I'm real. I can assume that Adam is real, but that's an assumption on my part. Adam could mm-hmm. be an NPC that reacts to me doing this. Okay. So all of those things have to occur and the NPCs have to be convincing enough that we don't go, you're not real. You are not real.
Like AI generated images last mm-hmm. year, multiple fingers, you know, multiple extra fingers and the feet were on the wrong way and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We knew that it was AI generated. Now they're starting to get where I know because I have it create images for our thumbnails.
Right.
And the longer I've been doing that, the better the pictures of humans are getting.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's very quickly going to get to where we can't tell.
Exactly. Exactly. But again, if you go back to the idea of virtual reality, you wear the headset, it's real enough to you. It tricks your brain into believing that what you're experiencing is real. Somebody throws something at you in a VR headset, you duck, you know, it's just, it's a reflex. Your brain is reacting to what it sees. So that could be our reality.
Yep.
So we've gone about this scientifically. We've gone about it philosophically, but is there any evidence now that we can look at that says, yeah, maybe. You know, maybe this is right. And one of the things that comes up every time you talk about the simulation theory is Mandela effects.
Yep.
And, you know, we've
Matt and I talk about that all the time.
All the time. Okay. All the time. The most recent one that we've been talking about is the Stouffer's stovetop stuffing, which was never made by Stouffer's. It's made by Kraft. But man,
yeah, but it is because I've seen pictures of Stouffer's.
I've seen
I sent you pictures of it.
I remember it. I remember the dadgum commercials.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The name fits Stouffer's.
There are pictures. There are pictures with it in somebody's cabinet and it says Stouffer's on the box and then stovetop stuffing. It's not, it's not just something we all made up. It was a thing.
Yeah. I mean,
I just pulled it up. I got it right here.
Yeah. I asked Amanda. I asked my mom.
Stouffer's.
I asked my sister. Yeah. Yeah. I asked all of them one day when I first heard about this one. And they all were like, it's Stouffer's. I'm like, not according to what I found. It's Kraft. And it's always been Kraft. It's just that one sticks in my craw. Some of the other ones... Like, when I look at the Fruit of the Loom logo, I'm like, I don't remember either way. I don't know that I ever looked that closely at the Fruit of the Loom logo. When you put a cornucopia in there, I'm like, yeah, that looks right. If you take it out, I'm like, yeah, that looks right too. You know, I never knew how the Berenstain Bears were spelled.
That one gets me. That one and Stouffer's, because I had a Berenstain Bears book. I grew up with them. So that one gets me as much as Stouffer's gets me. But like you said, Fruit of the Loom, I could care less. That doesn't matter.
And, you know, some of the things, like, you know, they always throw in the Darth Vader, you know, Luke, I am your father. And they were like, well, he didn't really say that.
Yeah, he said, no, I am your father. And it's like...
But I'm like, yeah, but, you know, how many movie lines are, you know, we bastardize to fit what we're saying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really get into that one. But I will admit that I thought Nelson Mandela had died. The original one, I thought that I remember him dying. And then when he died, I was like, I swear I thought he was already dead.
Yeah, I thought he died already. Yeah. Yep.
And I've had that happen with several other people. You know, somebody
I think there's
just
been
recently,
some that you and I have talked about.
They're like, man, I thought that guy had died. I can remember hearing that he had died. And then they're like, yeah, he just died. I can't remember who was the recent one. I can't remember right offhand, but yeah, it was another actor or something. I thought, man, this guy's dead. I know he's dead. I know he died like 3 years ago. Nope.
Yeah. How'd he die twice?
So the Mandela effect is part of it. It's like, okay, we are remembering glitches in the simulation where the simulation changed And we have become aware of it because our memory says, no, 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 it was this way. And I know it was this way. And I remember. And as Adam says, here's a picture, you know, that is left over. I don't know. The other one is deja vu. And deja vu, according to simulation theory, is where the program resets or reloads. So you feel like this has happened before. I've been here before. Yeah. Well, maybe you have. That was just the simulation running again. It's resetting. You're somewhere you're like, I've never been here. I've never been to this town. I've never been to this place. But yet I have this overwhelming feeling that I have, because maybe you are in a part of the simulation that you've already experienced, but it wasn't at this point. You know, if I went to New York and I had a deja vu from being on the subway, I'd be like, I've never been on the subway in New York. I've never even been to New York. But maybe that part of the simulation was in Nashville, and it's close enough that it makes me go, huh, I think I've already done this before, or I've mm-hmm. heard somebody say this before. So that's what's behind deja vu. It's just the program doing a reboot, essentially.
That makes me think of the Simpsons episode where Homer goes through the portal behind the bookcase. Yeah. And they're like, Homer, where are you? And he goes, I am somewhere where I don't know where I am. And I use that line often, and I like it.
Yeah, that's right. Now, another one is the glitches in the Matrix, which that has become a common term because of the movies. And
yeah,
it's really the strange coincidences or the things that seem impossible. And you see them all on the internet, you know, where they're like, there's my cat. My cat is now scratching at the door. You know,
right.
My cat
right,
just yeah. walked from one room in front of me, and now it's out scratching on the door. Or, you know, I saw one that was really interesting. The lady goes, you see this? I found this on the counter. It's a fingernail, an artificial fingernail, and it's this yellow. Here are my nails that I had done, like, 3 days ago. I have all 10 of them. Where did this come from? Why mm-hmm. is this in my house? You know, things like that. And
yep. Like my banana that remember oh, I yeah, told you about yeah. my disappearing banana. I had set a banana down on my cabinet in the house in Hendersonville. I walked into the other room. Dallas went with me. I came back and the banana was gone. Yeah. Never found that banana. So I don't know what happened to it. It ended up in somebody else's universe, man. Maybe.
Have you ever dropped something like right in front of you and it just vanished?
Yeah.
I mean, it happened to me the other day.
Gone.
Yeah. It's like, I have completely searched everywhere. There is no way in hell this thing is in this area. And I dropped it right here. Or, mm-hmm. and this has happened to me before too. You drop something and then you find it and you're like, how did you get way the hell over here? It's like mm-hmm. 20 feet away. You're like,
yep. I'd have heard it bounce that right. far or something.
Yeah. It landed on the carpet. It could have yeah. bounced a few inches, not mm-hmm. 20 feet. You know, yeah. how did it get from here to there? It's strange. Those are all the glitches in the Matrix. Now, these other ones are kind of odd, like the quantum weirdness. This is the phenomena like the double slit experiment. When you observe something, it alters reality for some reason. If you're not looking mm-hmm. at it, it does its own thing. When you yeah. look at it, it does something else. Okay. And then the mathematical structure of our universe, our physics, our physical laws, you know, the laws of physics are fundamentally mathematical, as if they were coded that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like we understand, you know, these things, this, you hear it all the time. That's outside of the laws of physics. That cannot happen. It cannot exist. It cannot do that because the laws of physics wouldn't allow it because they were coded that way. And so we understand them because that's what the code says works. So, you know, gravity works the way it does. You can't pass through solid matter. You know, all of that kind of stuff because it's coded that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are just these little physical constants that appear precisely set for life, which many people interpret as intentional programming. You know, they're all humans do certain things. We all eat, we all poop, you know, we all sleep. You know, we all do these things. It's a part of our life. And somebody that didn't do any of those things, that's not normal. And it's not, yeah, and right. It's not consistent with life. I mean, you think about it. If you don't eat as a human, if you don't take nutrients, you will die. You will waste away and die because that's what the code says, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this, if you don't poop, guess what? You will die.
Yep, for sure.
And so it's those things that just seem like the intelligent design. Somebody set it up to be this way. Somebody made it this way. It's not like my idea. How did they know to go that animal that we're going to call a chicken? Something white just fell out of its butt. I'm going to eat it.
Yeah, right.
Well, something brown just fell out of your butt. I'm not going to eat it. Why would you think I'm going to eat this that fell out of a chicken's butt? But somebody did.
Yeah.
And
oyster.
Yeah. That's still that.
Disgusting snot balls of, I'm just going to scrape this out of a shell and swallow
it. If you like oysters, what? Amanda loves them. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? What are you missing in your life that makes you think this is a meal?
Explain to me why that is a delicacy. Why it, and don't give me this whole, it's an aphrodisiac. No, because I subscribe to the Andrew Zimmern thing where he said, no matter where I go in the world, the most disgusting, raunchy thing, somebody says you eat it because it's an aphrodisiac.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I subscribe to that theory. You say that to get people to eat the stupid things.
Yeah.
Why is this a delicacy to you? It's a snot ball. It doesn't taste good. It tastes like you're chewing the bottom of a shoe that's been in the ocean with slime all over it. And you don't even chew it. You suck it down because you don't want the grit that's in the oyster either. So
yeah. I don't know. I don't understand.
The hell is wrong with you?
I've tried them. Amanda's like,
yeah, I have too.
Let me fix you one up. It's like cracker and horseradish and hot sauce and all this shit. And I'm like, if you got to put all that on there,
that means it's gross.
You know, if you've got to make it taste better.
I tried them fried several times and fried in po' boys and everything. And it's gross. Yeah. And like you said, if you got to put all that stuff on top of an oyster to get it down, you don't actually like it. You just say you do to seem cool.
That's it. That's all it is. You just want to be able to say that you can eat it. You're cool.
Yeah. I can eat an oyster with hot sauce and crackers and cheese.
But you know, we ought to do a show where we talk about like what you were talking about at the very beginning, where like we've all agreed that this is green and stuff because, you know, somebody tells me that something tastes good, like Amanda loves celery, and I cannot stand celery. It tastes like I'm sucking on a penny when I eat it. I taste metal.
Me too. Licking the inside of a tin can.
I can taste it in parts per million. Okay.
Same.
If you waved celery over whatever it was you're cooking, I'm going to know. I can taste it. Mm-hmm. I don't like it.
Yep.
But so many people do. And I've realized there's all this, you know, they've talked about, well, some people have an enzyme and they don't, you know, and so it tastes like metal to some people. There's one with watermelon, like watermelon tastes like cinnamon or something. I don't have that because I love watermelon.
I definitely have the cilantro one.
Oh, yeah. Cilantro tastes like soap.
Yep. And I tell you, though, what I learned, and I think I said this before, is they said, well, the people have a certain gene that makes them taste soap when they eat it. What they have then come to find out is the people who don't taste soap are the genetic anomaly.
Exactly, yeah.
Because historically, we were not supposed to like it.
Right.
And slowly, people have went, I'll eat soap. Yeah. And so then now they eat soap weed and they've started to like it. And I am more normal because I'm more like the ancestors with the genes. And I told Ashley this and she goes, yeah, that makes sense that I am more evolved than you. She goes, you could be half Neanderthal. I get it. And I'm like, yeah, well, way to turn that argument around on me.
When you told me that years ago. And I like cilantro. Yes. I have eaten it on tacos, and I can taste soap because you've said it. And I'm like,
oh, yeah,
it does taste like soap, but I like it. So maybe I'm just like, maybe I just like soap.
Yeah, you probably just like the taste of soap.
Doesn't bother me. I like it. It goes well with my taco. So.
Pump some Dial in your mouth and see if you still like that.
Yeah, no.
Go get some of that old school orange Dial.
Yeah.
And get that on the tongue. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm gonna start cussing out people and then like put my own soap bar in my mouth like Christmas Story.
Please wash my mouth out with soap. Please. Yeah, I've gone blind.
Oh man. Hey. So we've come to the part of the show where we say, what do you guys think? Do you think there is a chance that we live in a simulation? I think my personal opinion is regardless of what's running it, that, life is a simulation. It's here for us, you know, it's here for humans. So what we experience is here for us. You know, I don't know if we're in base reality or not, but it doesn't really matter because, you know, I look at my family, I look at my kids, and you know, when I put my arms around Amanda, I'm like, okay, she's real to me now, and it makes me happy, and that's all I care about.
And that's me. If it's a simulation, then I'm perfectly fine with it because my simulation has been programmed well for me. And all I can ask is that if it is a simulation, don't let me find out before I die that it was all a simulation. Just let me go to the grave, assuming that I just organically found Ashley and had a son and all this stuff. Don't tell me that she's a NPC programmed for me.
Yeah. I don't want
to make me feel good. I don't want to know that. Just let me go to the grave or the end of the program thinking this was all life. And I'm perfectly fine with it being a simulation. Right. I'm not going to go try to find out. I'm not going to be one of these people that I'm going to test it and see. I don't care. I don't want to know. Ignorance is bliss.
It's fun to talk about.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
So let us know what you think. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. Thousands of members in there. You know, just talking about stuff like this, you know, simulation theory, ghosts, UFOs, you name it. People telling dad jokes. It's just a cool place online. It's one of the best groups out there. Don't forget to go and check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show. That is where you can sign up to become a patron if you want to get access to all of our bonus content. Please go check it out. It really helps the show, no matter how much or how little you want to sign up for. It really helps the work that Adam and I do, and we sincerely appreciate it.
Definitely.
So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the simulated graveyard.
See you soon.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.